if you had to pick one artist that you think could match that, if they released a concert film in 2024, who would it be?
It would be the Dave Matthews Band, because I would be the guy spending all that money.
Hey, welcome to Trapital. I'm your host, Dan Runcie. This is your place to gain insights on the business that shapes music, media, and culture. We dive deep into the companies and moguls who start the trends that shape the rest of the business world. 2023 was a big year for concert films. Taylor Swift's Eras Tour film officially became the highest grossing concert film of all time, with nearly $270 million in worldwide box office gross. And that doesn't even include the money that Taylor Swift got from the Disney Plus deal for this concert film. Beyonce's Renaissance film also grossed tens of millions of dollars. And then years before that, BTS's concert film also grossed tens of millions of dollars. To be clear, this isn't the first time we've seen this happen before. Other artists have had successful concert films. We had Justin Bieber's concert film more than a decade ago. You had Michael Jackson's concert film that came out the same year that he passed away in 2009. And dating back to The Last Waltz with the Band and the Martin Scorsese film, we've seen this trend. So where is this going? What does this look like in a few years? Is this just a Taylor Swift, Beyonce, superstar in the moment thing? Or can the rest of the stars in the industry eat at the box office too? Well, today, we're going to dive into all of that and more with our guest, Jimmy Stone. Jimmy Stone runs Alderbrook Companies, which is a financial advisory and early stage investment firm. He also runs Leveling Up, which is his newsletter that breaks down insights on music, tech, and investing. If you haven't checked it out yet, I recommend that you do that. In the first part of this episode, you'll hear a conversation with Jimmy and I. We talk about the piece that he wrote in Trapital about the rise of concert films and where he sees the space going. And then after our conversation, you'll hear a portion of that essay. Jimmy was kind enough to gift us his voice, so we shared a portion of that essay read aloud by him in this. So after the conversation, you can hear that. And if you're interested, you can check out and read the full essay in our show notes. We have a link to it. Here's our conversation. Hope you enjoy it. All right, we're here today to talk about the rise of concert films. 2023 was a huge year for this, and I'm joined by Jimmy Stone from Alderbrook Companies. Jimmy, welcome to the pod.
Hey, Dan, great to be here. Thanks for inviting me on.
It's been interesting to see the waves of these things happen as well, because it felt like there's been intermittent moments over time when we've seen concert films come through. You talked about in the piece, whether it's Scorsese's The Last Waltz covering the Band. I mean, that was decades ago at this point. We had Michael Jackson, This Is It, which came out right after he passed away. You had the Justin Bieber film. And then now you have these two films from two of the biggest stars in the world happening now. So it's interesting how these things have ebbed and flowed over the years. Sometimes there's likely some type of trend or commonality, but it feels sometimes like it's one of those things where when it rains, it pours. Here we are.
I noticed that too. It seems like there were a lot of like 3D movies coming around in like the late 2000s, early 2010s. The deals that Beyonce and Taylor Swift were able to structure definitely were a large part of the trend. You also had some interesting dynamics in Hollywood with writer strikes, actor strikes. So there was a need for supply of new content, I'm sure, in theaters. You're coming out of COVID. Theaters are hurting, trying to get back to their pre-COVID levels. So it seemed like, I don't know, like the perfect storm. You also have two artists who are at the peak of their powers, looking for innovative new ways to get their content across. It seemed like the timing was just right, I would say.
Few things happening here. And I want to look at Beyonce first in this case, because she's someone who has been more of a visual artist over the years. The Lemonade film was something that was released directly to HBO as a visual album. She had visual albums in the 2000s. More recently, after her Coachella performance, she released that, but that didn't go to theaters. That went directly to Netflix. And I believe she got paid a reported $20 million for that fee to be able to give it exclusively to Netflix. And that was actually one of the original deep dives that we had done here at Trapital. This, though, definitely shifted things because, as you mentioned, you have this timely moment. You have these two superstars who now are grossing more than ever for their respective careers. There is now this post-pandemic boom that they were able to capture. And you had this moment of the Hollywood strikes going on, both SAG and the writers on strikes. So you had a few things. One, there was just a natural dearth that happens, especially around the Thanksgiving, early October timeframe. You may get some of the Oscar campaigning films, but no more of the summer blockbusters. And a lot of the big releases like Dune Part 2 were pushed to 2024. So you really had this moment.
And I mean, the numbers speak to that, especially the Taylor Swift film, the largest of all time concert film. So they definitely captured the moment.
It was interesting to see the numbers too, because I think it just etched out the Michael Jackson documentary. I think they both were around 260, but Taylor's was 261 million in change. And then Michael's is there. So it makes me think of those strategic things that theaters will do where they'll re-release Star Wars or they'll re-release Titanic every few years, just so it becomes a number one grossing film.
Just to edge it out. Yeah. I mean, it was funny when I was researching it, there's a great third party source that I'm blanking on that follows the film space. And you can't really tell if she etched it out on that, but there are other articles, obviously, that say that Taylor was able to etch out the Michael Jackson films. I don't know whose numbers are correct or not, but we'll say that she's number one going forward.
The other unique thing, though, between the two of these is that domestic versus the international box office shift, because if we want to say that both Taylor Swift Eras film and Michael Jackson's This Is It film from 2009 both grossed around the same, granted Michael's was in 2009 dollars, 14 years earlier, but still, Michael's gross revenue, 27% of his box office draw was from the domestic pull versus the Eras tour was 69%. And it's just a reminder of Michael Jackson, huge audience in the US, of course, but the international product is crazy.
No, I noticed that figure too. I don't think we talked about it in the piece, but it's a great point. That'd be something definitely to follow up on and do a deeper dive into in terms of why he was able to reach such a large international audience in terms of revenue, maybe just how his music speaks to different demographics. But I think that's a great point.
And I know we could definitely go do a whole deep dive on Michael Jackson, but we'll keep it centered on these two films for now. But one of the things that you did talk about in the piece, which is important, is transmedia and this broader strategy of storytelling across different platforms. And another group that is known for this as well is BTS, who also had a very successful concert film that they've released in recent years. So could you talk a bit about that and how you see that weaving in with concert films and just how concert films could be a channel for this?
You know, transmedia is interesting. Just for those that aren't familiar, it's the idea about telling new unified stories across platforms. So if you think about Star Wars and The Mandalorian, a new Star Wars story in a new format, so streaming instead of film, or you think about The Matrix and the game The Matrix Online video game, telling new stories about the Matrix franchise in a different format, video game instead of film. You've got artists like Taylor Swift putting new content out on a new format versus artists like Beyonce, who's putting out new content in a new format, but not just the concert, but also giving you the behind the scenes of what's happening in her life and whatnot. So different artists seems to be approaching transmedia storytelling differently. But the idea generally is to put music content, in this case, onto new formats. So whether it's film, television, streaming services, books, webtoons, Hive's done an incredible job. And the idea is to extend the content so you reach new demographics, new audiences, who have more opportunity to engage with your content. You know, the tricky thing is that in addition to all the money it takes to release new content and new formats, you have to be careful of making sure that the new content is authentic to your story and what you're building, because there can be a lot of issues about just exploiting, just trying to chase monetization as opposed to something that's truly authentic to the brand and what you're trying to build. So that's the balance.
This also made me think of Beyonce and some of the more recent elements we've seen. She's at the Grammys, she wears this cowboy hat, and then she has this platinum blonde hair, and there's clearly this vibe she's going for. Then a week later, in the Super Bowl, she has this commercial with Verizon where she announces her album and then she releases music there as well. So even though the Grammys and the Super Bowl weren't traditional outlets for Beyonce, she wasn't being awarded, she wasn't performing at either of them, she's even used those as a bit of transmedia storytelling rollout for her album, Renaissance Act 2.
You know, Taylor Swift at the Grammys, part I caught to when Taylor Swift won her award, she mentioned, you know, the new album's going to drop on this date. She released something on Instagram. So like, you know, that's another beautiful example of, if you think about it, the video game analogy of live operations, you know, giving your users more content, new content at all times. Another example of that point. Clearly these artists are thinking strategically about how they look, what they say, when they say it. I mean, it all goes into their story.
On the point of transmedia storytelling specifically, thinking about Beyonce and Taylor Swift in these films, how do you feel like these films line up? Because they went with slightly different approaches where where Taylor Swift's film felt like more of a straight shot of the tour. She essentially did a visual of the tour that she did in Los Angeles at SoFi Stadium, spread it out over a few nights, but that's what the show was. Beyonce's was a bit more documentary style. She had interviews and clips with different folks. How would you compare those as it relates to transmedia storytelling?
I think I would say Beyonce's would be more in line with the traditional definition of transmedia storytelling, of showing more than just the concert, not just repurposing the concert, a new format, you know, actually giving glimpses of more of her story. I think it's hard because with Taylor Swift, you know, and the concert ticket prices and the access that a lot of people had to go to that show, for them, it is almost like a new part of her story. If we're trying to fit it into the definition of transmedia storytelling, Beyonce probably is more true to that in her film, but it's a tricky dance. And who really cares at the end of the day if you're definitionally in line with transmedia storytelling? It's clearly resonated with a large audience and was successful. So I'd leave it there.
Because I think the other thing that's unique too about this is that you're able to create a new experience with it. Because I think a lot of the transmedia storytelling is, whether you're sitting in a theater or you could be reading it from home or watching an internet clip or whatever it is, but there's something about seeing an artist perform in a theater when the theater isn't your typical setting where most people want to be quiet. You were encouraged to sing along and it felt more like a musical or a concert in that type of way. And you're able to have that type of experience, which is much more unique to have in a theater, which is cool and something unique that fans otherwise wouldn't have at the accessible price of either $19.89 for adults or $13.33 for seniors and kids.
Always being strategic, right? With the ticket pricing. That point is really important as a reason to roll out a concert film versus going straight to a streaming service, you know, sitting at home, you know, by yourself or with your loved one and watching a concert versus the adrenaline of being with fellow fans. I'm a big sports fan. If you think about those like watch parties where the away team of, I don't know, the Super Bowl, the NCAA championship, fans will go to the stadium to cheer on the team together. It's got that vibe to it. Which I think is really cool, and I wouldn't be surprised to be repeated by others in the future.
I think there's a huge market here, and with music in general, thinking about concerts or festivals like Coachella or live performances and other things like that, the live streaming product and broadcast has become its own game, whether it's YouTube and Hulu and others trying to compete for those rights. What does that look like if you can sell tickets to that and create that type of experience too for all the fans that would want to see that headliner and otherwise can't? So I think there's a lot there. Now let's dig into the economics here, because I know this was a big piece that intrigued both you and I. Beyonce and Taylor went about this differently. A lot of us saw the headlines where they bypassed the traditional movie studios, but AMC was in this interesting role as both the exhibitor and the distributor of this film. And in a lot of ways, it did work out for better economics, at least in terms of the number of hands that are in the pie being split for both AMC and these artists and their teams and the movie theaters.
So typically a studio would be involved in terms of, you know, financing the film and making sure it gets distributed and marketed well. In return, they would get a quite large split of the revenues. What's interesting though, and again, like some of this is speculation, don't come from the film business, but if you look at the historical performance of concert films relative to major motion pictures, they're not super successful, relatively speaking, if that makes sense. On the other hand, they don't cost as much to create. You know, we're talking $10 to $20 million for Taylor Swift and Beyonce's films is what the estimate is, versus hundreds of millions of dollars potentially for a major motion picture. If a major studio's perspective, I'd imagine that they're going to want quite a large split, right, in order to make it worthwhile for them, which is probably part of what drove Taylor Swift and Beyonce to make the direct deal with AMC. And from AMC's position, other than, you know, upsetting the studios, which I'm sure they're thinking, hey guys, like you're going straight to streaming services on a lot of these films. You're not really thinking about us every time you make a decision. When I think about negotiating with a major studio versus, you know, an artist who's releasing probably one film, I would expect them to get better relative economics, but I don't know that. It seems like a great partnership, you know, a win-win for both parties, assuming the film is successful and the $10 to $20 million is recouped.
In looking at some of the economics there, there's some reporting from Puck on this. So the artists, both Swift and Beyonce respectively, and AMC, took 57% of the ticket revenue that came in, and then the theaters got the remaining 43% plus the concession that they normally get. In a more traditional type of setting, the studios would normally have had their 8 to 15% distribution fee there. The thing is, though, with the way that the splits worked, it worked out quite well for them, because if you do the math, Taylor Swift's film grosses $260+ million. Even if you assume that AMC has 7% or likely even smaller percent of that split, that's 50% that goes straight to Taylor Swift's team. And then that puts you well over $100 million. And you had the comparison of Tom Cruise's take from Top Gun Maverick in the piece, and that was heralded as one of the best deals in Hollywood. And that's a film that made well over $1 billion. And right. Taylor Swift earned more from this film, even though it did 20% of the revenue that Top Gun Maverick did. Let's take a break for this week's chart metric stat of the episode. Beyoncé's Renaissance film made its motion picture debut in theaters on December 1st, 2023. The week before its release, November 22nd through 28th, her average chart metric artist rank was number 20 of all of the artists in the world. But by the end of December, one full month in theaters, her average chart metric artist rank jumped up to number 13. And a lot of that lift had to do with the power of that film. Let's go back to the episode.
We haven't talked about this yet, but it's not just about the film, right? I mean, the data bears out. So Luminate put out some great data that showed a bump in her streaming numbers and Beyonce's streaming numbers when these films came out. You Sid sent me the great article about selling on the streaming rights to the concert film for a vast amount of money. There's multiple shots on goal here, in addition to what they gross at the box office. Huge success, huge win for Taylor Swift and her team.
There's an interesting flip side to this, though, because I look at it more as a trade-off depending on who's getting what, but some people felt like they left considerable money on the table by not going through the traditional route. And there were a few articles about this that brought up some interesting stuff. And with some of these things, it's hard to determine whether or not this is angry, bitter distributor that didn't get theirs versus honest take. But the projected openings at the time were north of 100 million for the domestic box office and 150 million worldwide. This is specifically for Taylor Swift's Eras film. It ended up opening up at 92 million, which is still pretty close. But there were several indie movie theaters that felt a bit confused, just given the role of AMC being both the distributor for this film and also the exhibitor. And they felt like the big theaters, AMC, Regal, and Cinemark, knew what was up, but the indie theaters felt like they didn't necessarily. And some of them felt like they were scrambling a bit to rewrite and schedule things and make sure that things are the place that they were. So that was one thing. And then secondly, there was this press release that came out about 100 million tickets being sold ahead of time. And some people saw that and thought that the tickets were sold out and maybe weren't necessarily sure. Even other theaters that ended up having the theater or having showing of the Taylor Swift film played to empty theaters. There was one in Oakland here that had felt a bit disappointed in the box office because they just didn't have the gross that they expected. And they thought part of it was some of the confusion around the marketing. And because of how it was presented, some people thinking that this was an AMC exclusive, meaning that it wasn't being distributed in other places. And of course, because AMC kind of wore both hats, they had the ability to both be the exhibitor themselves, but they distributed to some of the other chains as well. But there were still some that felt like they left money on the table. And that's where, again, it's left money for who? Because you have to do the math where it's one of those trade-offs to say, okay, if you made what you think you would have expected to, like how much more are we talking? If you think that this film could have doubled its revenue, then sure, there's a case to be made to have the conversation that that could have netted more than Taylor Swift or more than Taylor Swift would have otherwise taken. But if we're talking 5-10%, then it's hard to say that the economics weren't in the favor. So it's one of these things where it's a bit of chicken and egg. It's probably hard to determine, but it was interesting to hear that part of it, because I think with these things, it's always, you know, rah-rah pro artist and doing that, which makes complete sense. But how much money was being left on the table and for who is an interesting question.
In general, looking at the historical performance of concert films, I find it, and granted the Michael Jackson film, it's a good point, inflation adjusted would be higher, But I think it's hard to make a point when you come out with the highest grossing concert film of all time that you made a big mistake there. This being kind of the first time that these agreements have been in place, it doesn't surprise me that it wasn't perfect. It was a bold move. And I think with any new thing, there's going to be mistakes, hiccups along the way. From my research, I didn't find a ton of like critical negative articles on how things went. I'm sure things could be improved in the future.
When you have something that is a bit unique, there's always going to be critiques. And I think there's also some of that that can come from folks that were understandably bitter about things from their situation. It's a very similar thing to what we hear in music as well, where people will say, oh, well, you're cutting off your supply if you're not partnering with the major labels on this. And it's like, sure, okay, not everyone in the world may know this song, but this artist is also able to live on their own terms and not need to play the more traditional game either. So there's a version of this that exists in every format.
Absolutely. It's all about trade-offs. I walked away thinking to myself, it was a good deal for Taylor and her team. But yeah, I'm sure not everybody feels that way.
As we're talking about this, both of these films, Beyonce and Taylor specifically, still have the opportunity to do extremely well with the streaming rights and the exclusive streaming right opportunities there. The reported number that we saw for Taylor Swift's Eras film tour and its partnership with Disney was $75 million. That's huge. It wasn't that long ago that $20 million was the going rate for some of these music documentaries and things like that, or even Beyonce, which she got for Homecoming there. So that's a huge, huge number. And that's on top of this number that we just saw with this AMC movie.
Yeah, it's another reason to follow more of a transmedia strategy in terms of using existing content in new formats to tell a story. It provides the opportunity for a lot more revenue that doesn't require you to be out on the road putting time, effort, energy into. So for certain artists, it can be really, really powerful for what they're able to earn.
And in the piece too, you talked about a few things. You talked about other genres where this could work, and you talked about other artists that could likely do something similar. Let's start with the genre piece, because you did mention Latin music and just how popular that is with YouTube and that audience there. What do you see that looking like?
I thought it was interesting that on-demand video streaming market share exceeds audio streaming for that genre. And then the Motion Picture Association put out a report that showed that Hispanic and Latino Americans have the highest per capita theater attendance among all ethnicities in the US. Again, this is super high level, but the data suggests that you have a group that's likes visual content, goes to the movie theater. There hasn't really been a much supply of concert film, none that I'm aware of, that have done big numbers that have been shown in theaters. So it seems like it's fertile ground for somebody to experiment with a project like that.
I feel like it's inevitable for Bad Bunny. He's had so many major tours. He was in that Bullet Train movie. He's a WWE star. It only feels like a matter of time.
You heard it here first. Let's go.
What about other artists as well? Because I think you mentioned Ed Sheeran and Billie Eilish or folks like that. I know those are big names, but is there anything specific about them that you think?
During our research, we were just looking at streaming numbers all time. I mean, the other thing to look at, I think, is concert ticket prices and relative to the venue supply. It just seemed like there were a lot of really, really popular artists who were quite active that could have an opportunity here to extend their content into a new format and potentially have some pretty significant success.
Taylor might be an outlier, but is there any of those specifically that you think could match what we saw from Beyonce, the Renaissance film? And that total gross was $44 million.
From Taylor Swift, I don't think so. It just seems like this is her moment. She's got the zeitgeist. So for like an active artist to surpass that in a concert film, I personally don't see it. I do think there could be some interesting, more older artists, for specific milestones releasing concert films. So like, who knows when the Rolling Stones will ever stop touring, but in a world where it's farewell time, if they ever decide to do that, if there was a concert film around that, that could be pretty interesting, I feel like. But no, she's so big right now. I don't see anybody surpassing that anytime soon.
And I think there's something about certain types of people and certain types of artists and genres that just do well in certain types of settings. We recently did an episode about concert residencies, and we were talking about how female pop stars do so well because they often have elaborate dances and performances, and there's a more theatrical aspect of what they do, which lines up so well with Vegas. And I think there's something like that, which also lines up well with things on the big screen. It also makes me think of ABBA Voyage, which you all just so mentioned in the piece as well, about here we have a group that is no longer active in that same type of way. Their biggest hits came in the 70s, but it's continued to live on, whether it's movies like Mamma Mia and the sequels or this VR experience.
I think it's really impressive, not just the visuals, you know, the numbers, the financials there are incredible. I think it's like $2 million a week it was doing, or maybe still doing. And I think what's interesting about it is they also call it like a virtual residency. So I think it's really cool that you brought up Las Vegas. Maybe there's a world where, you know, if you're a successful artist, you know, in your prime, you release a concert film, and then you go to Vegas, you do your residency there. And then when you retire and hang them up, you know, your VR experience or something. I think it's an interesting new technology. I think we'll definitely see more of it. I mean, I think Vegas would be a great spot potentially for it. You know, the costs right now, I don't know exactly, but my understanding is they're quite high to create one of those experiences, which is no surprise. So I'd imagine, you know, as the technology improves and the costs come down, we'll see more and more of that, just given the success of it so far.
And it's always interesting to see which types of artists, whether it's a legacy artist or a current artist, that just do well here. I think about a group like Queen. They haven't done this yet, but similarly in the ABBA way, they've had movies, they've had these pop culture moments that have helped that band and its music and its legacy live on. I could see something there. But then there's also the legendary artists and groups that never quite resonated in the commercial billboard sense, but still have these rabidly strong fan bases because of how they perform and tour, like Fish or Grateful Dead or Jimmy Buffett, or even someone like Dolly Parton. She has had more commercially successful hits, but thinking about how she has an amusement park and just ways that artists like that have been able to expand and how that looks. I feel like concert films specifically may still require some commercial success just given the nature of the product itself, but there's something interesting there. It's like this potion that you mix together that can help you predict who is most likely to be the most successful one to be able to at least do 50 million in a box office release.
The one thing I didn't mention on the ABBA thing that I also thought was really interesting is the artists, like the avatars are of them in like the 1970s, I think, like late 1970s. They're playing on nostalgia. It feels like super hardcore. So to your point, I agree. Like the later stage artists who have rabid fan bases where nostalgia is just this core that, you know, I think they would do quite well.
And how much of this do you think is repeat viewing versus one-time viewing and what that potential looks like? Because I think there's something about the live viewing and maybe even the VR experience that could lend itself to people going time and time again to go check out the thing. But I wonder what that looks like from a concert film perspective. Any thoughts there?
I haven't seen the data on that. So I'm purely speculating right now. On the concert film side, I don't necessarily think you'd have a ton of recurring revenue. It seems like you would watch it once and you would have seen it. Having said that, I feel like on certain concert films, so like I think about The Last Waltz and the Band, if you can capture something that's like a milestone and is like truly special and unique, like probably watch that more than once. And like I truly love the music. So when you think about remonetizing stuff over and over again, you're probably not going to ever achieve like that initial scale. But I'm sure there's a portion of a fan base that'll still come back to it.
As we enter 2024 and the rest of the year, I think we'll see more artists attempt to do these. I think we'll see several more either push to do it and maybe don't quite get there. But I guess to close things out, if you had to pick one artist that you think could gross, let's say $40 million. So let's put it conservatively around the same number that Beyonce did. Not that that is a conservative number necessarily, but if you had to pick one artist that you think could match that, if they released a concert film in 2024, who would it be?
It would be the Dave Matthews Band, because I would go and I would be the guy spending all that money. No, I think it would probably be...
I was going to say, they're another one I should have mentioned with the Grateful Dead and right. Fish. Dave Matthews does have commercial hits from the 90s and stuff, but no, that's another good one.
But I'd probably say somebody like Drake, somebody who's like the all-time leader in streaming. If he was to marry a concert film release with like a major milestone in his career, I could see it doing very, very well.
Especially with him and J. Cole on tour together or doing some shows together. I feel like the combination of those two, something that could be a lot of fun. Well, Jimmy, thanks again for coming on. Really appreciate it. And for those that want to stay tuned with you and your writing, where should they go to follow along?
We write a newsletter on Substack called Leveling Up. That's where to find me. And then for our website, it's alderbrookcompanies.com. Feel free to reach out. We have a contact page if you ever want to catch up on concert films or anything else we're writing about. Feel free to reach out.
Awesome. Thanks again, Jimmy. Appreciate it.
See you, Dan.
So before we get to Jimmy's piece, I do want to share one thought that I've been thinking a lot about since we had this conversation. And that thought is that there's levels to this. There are tiers of the artists that can do certain things. Some of this is obvious, but this is a podcast, so let's talk it through. On that first tier, what we saw Taylor Swift and Beyonce just do, not only do you have a concert film that you're putting directly in studios, but you work directly with a company like AMC that's wearing both the hat of exhibitor and distributor, and you get better economics as a result because you bypass the traditional studios. Did you leave money on the table potentially for the overall box office gross for not reaching all of the theaters you could have and just the communication around it? Yes. But do you have more ownership and upside within what you actually had? Of course you do. You may have had a slightly smaller pie, but you had a bigger slice of that pie. That's the top tier. The next tier, we saw artists more recently, whether it's a Travis Scott or even a Kanye West, they've had concert films or concert productions that they've released. They went with more traditional distributors. Their grosses may not necessarily be nearly as high as what we saw from Taylor Swift and Beyonce, but they were still able to do it that way. And then I think the next tier is where we see a lot of the stars in the music industry, where they have the live stream production of their concerts that are put directly on the various streaming services. Whether it's an artist like Lizzo, we've seen her concerts on Max. We've seen Kendrick Lamar's Big Steppers tour on Amazon Prime. We've also seen artists like Ariana Grande, Justin Timberlake, or even Beyonce 5 years ago with her Homecoming documentary from the Coachella performance that she did. That was on Netflix. So even Beyonce, everything's changed for her in this regard in 5 years. So a lot can change. And there's a lot too that needs to be called out about this current moment that we're in. Post-pandemic, these are the first tours that a lot of these artists have had in a while. What will this look like a few years down the road? It'll be fascinating to see. But those are the levels that we see things. So it's something important to keep in mind with this. And with that, here's a segment of Jimmy's essay that he wrote in Trapital. Hope you enjoy it.
What is driving the rise of concert films? Over the past few years, there has seemingly been increased interest and investment in motion pictures showcasing live musical performances. Let's explore a few of the likely drivers of this trend from the point of view of two key stakeholders, the artist slash rights holder and the distributor slash film studio. For the first group, there are several reasons to consider releasing a concert film. First, they're an alternative way for artists to engage and retain their fans. Musicians releasing their IP in new formats to continuously engage with their audiences aligns with the transmedia entertainment trend. Leveling Up has written about transmedia storytelling in the music industry when we analyze the South Korean music company HYBE. As a reminder, transmedia storytelling is the telling of stories across platforms. For example, a story might originate in a comic book series and then be expanded through television, novels, games, films, etc. For actively touring artists like Taylor Swift and Beyonce, releasing a concert film helps keep their content fresh in the minds of their fan bases. Meanwhile, for legacy artists, concert films can help rights holders re-engage their older fan bases and/or enable discovery by a new generation of fans, like my college experience with The Last Waltz. For example, film studio A24 re-released Talking Heads' Stop Making Sense film late last year. Originally released in 1984, the film grossed $5 million in theaters and contributed to the band's internet search interest spiking. According to The Hollywood Reporter, nearly 60% of the audience for Stop Making Sense's opening weekend was under 35 years old, with many attendees not even born when the Talking Heads split up. Second, concert films enable artists to engage and monetize new demographics. Certain fans may prefer concert films to live or live streaming at home. For fans with less disposable income, concert movies can be an attractive alternative. While it may be an extreme example, the ticket pricing for Taylor Swift's The Eras Tour concert films range from $19.89 for adults to $13.13 for children and seniors in the U.S., versus the average resale prices for the Eras Tour live concert, reaching over $1,000 per ticket.
Similarly, other demographics, including children, seniors, individuals with disabilities, and those impacted by geographic constraints, may find a movie venue much more accessible than a live concert. As one Taylor Swift fan said, quote, "It makes the Eras Tour accessible. Hopefully families with young children who can't afford over $500 on tickets will take their kids to see this, and the little ones especially won't particularly care that they're not seeing it live," end quote. At the same time, the concert film still enables an artist's fans to share an in-person experience with other fans. This can get lost watching a concert film at home on a streaming service. Along these lines, moviegoers were allowed to ignore typical big screen etiquette for the Eras Tour film. Fans encouraged to dance and sing along to the film. Here's a link to what dozens of Swifties going nuts at the movie look like. Simply put, concert films can help artists extend their demographic reach. Third, concert films can catalyze fans to engage more often with an artist's music. Instead of cannibalizing consumption of an artist's other IP, the data suggests that concert films may actually lead passionate audiences to consume even more of an artist's content. According to Luminate, Taylor Swift, Talking Heads, and Beyoncé all saw a meaningful increase in U.S. and global on-demand audio streams in the weeks after their films were released in 2023. Four, concert films can be lucrative now more than ever. While the transmedia storytelling strategy is becoming increasingly popular, it's fair to argue that it's not really a new one. If we're trying to understand the why now for concert films' growing popularity, the deal Taylor Swift and her team struck to distribute the Eras Tour is likely a key driver. In a novel move, Swift partnered with AMC Theaters directly to distribute her film, rather than working with a Hollywood film studio. Beyoncé also chose to partner with AMC directly for her film. As a result, both artists reportedly received an unprecedented 50% of ticket sales, a much higher split than the traditional creator studio deal. For comparison, actor Tom Cruise reportedly received just over 5% of Top Gun Maverick's gross ticket sales. Cutting the studio from the split equation makes the concert film genre much more lucrative for artists. Swift's film is estimated to have cost only $10 to $20 million, whereas major motion pictures can easily cost over hundreds of millions of dollars to create. This means that Swift likely earned over $100 million on her 50% share of the gross box office, and that's before licensing the film to streaming services. Plus, development of concert films is relatively straightforward, whereas it can take a meaningful amount of time, typically measured in years, to develop a major motion picture. Concert films can be spun up in a matter of months. This helps reduce the effort and risk associated with creating them. Simply put, due to innovative partnerships, successful concert films are now more lucrative for rights holders than ever. 5. Concert films are another form of artistic expression. In addition to any commercial motivations, concert movies are an opportunity for creative control and artistic expression. For instance, Beyoncé's involvement in Renaissance as a writer, director, and producer illustrates a trend where artists take more creative control over their content. This level of control helps ensure that the film accurately represents an artist's vision. Meanwhile, many concert movies allow artists to document pivotal career moments, serving as time capsules for their fans. In this sense, fortuitous timing is also likely at play with the rise of recent concert films. Both Taylor Swift and Beyoncé, generational talents, simultaneously showcase their talent and creativity. There is an element of chance, or perhaps strategic timing, coming during their world tours for these two superstars to release their films in the same year. As a result, the happenstance may have allowed each film to garner greater momentum, existing as part of a trend rather than as a standalone entity.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. Send it to one or two people you think would really get value out of listening to this episode. And while you're at it, if you could rate and review the show, that would be great. Rate the podcast on Apple Podcasts, rate the podcast on Spotify, rate the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. That helps make sure that the word gets out about Trapital and what we're building here. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you next time.